Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Catch and Shoot podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. Catch and Shoot goes well with both red and white and is perfect with a workout of your choice. Our co-hosts are on both coasts, and they have all of NBA Nation covered. Adam Stanko in the Bay Area, and Noah Kozlov in the Big Apple.
We just wrapped the Larry Brown interview. That went on like a full week with Larry Brown. I haven't slept all week, but he was great. So we appreciate everybody who's listening to that show. Continue to share it as well. I'm Noah Kozlov. This is the Catch and Shoot podcast. I'm on the East Coast of New York City. Adam Stanko out west in San Francisco, having a good week.
Yes, it's been a good week. Funny you say that, Noah, about Larry Brown, because multiple people have told me they are listening to the interview, but every single time it's been, I'm about 30 minutes in. I'm about an hour in, to get through that monstrosity, this beast of an interview. But I'm so glad we did it, and it was pretty cool to get the feedback and to hear people learn a lot about Larry Brown that they didn't know and that we probably didn't know. It was some interesting, newsworthy, noteworthy stories, I think, in there for people that haven't heard. But
there's some great stories from our past interviews and podcasts. So go back and check out the Catch and Shoot podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can hear from Todd McCulloch. You can hear from Will Perdue. You can hear from Avery Johnson, Don McLean, Sean Elliott, Byron Scott, Dave McMenamin, Hall of Famer Alex English, and then radio voices in the NBA, Tom McGinnis, David Locke, Quinn Buckner, Mike Breen. There are so many that you can just go back and listen to, as they're mostly evergreen interviews. So go back and enjoy those. Also here on the Pure Hoops podcast network on Pure Hoops Media, you can check out the Mike Wise show. He had his best of show this week, which is, talk about an editing job to get a best of out of a Mike Wise show. That's got to win some sort of Webby Award. And the fact that Frank Isola made a best of show.
Well, that's the real.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. He's really scraping the bottom of the barrel. Monica McNutt, her show, Buckets, Boards, and Blocks, and also the Pure Hoop show with Eric Newman and NBA champion BJ Armstrong. So I want to update. So last week we started, I was telling you about Eden, my daughter, 4.5 years old, and some of the camp anxiety. So we got over that, had a very good, like, full-on, like, high five with my wife, great parenting session, and then went back to issues with swimming, instructional swim. No kid likes instructional swim. Nobody. But you just have to learn how to swim. So we had an issue this week. She didn't want to swim. She didn't swim. And so yesterday, I read this book. I read about 90 pages of this book. It's called Pride and Joy, a guide to understanding your child's emotions and solving family problems. Okay. And again, Eden is a terrific kid. And this is like our very first issue. And so a lot of this stuff we've already employed with her, of using, like, we don't reward the result. We reward the effort. So that she always, whether she gets an answer right or wrong. And so you're really not supposed to say you're so smart or this or that. It's, I really like how you thought there, or I really like how you tried to figure this out. So you reward the effort, and we listen to her and make sure she's heard and we understand her feelings. So last night we decided, you know what, we're going to go with, in this book, it suggested having 10 minutes of uninterrupted conversation, usually right before bed. So we told Eden, I said, look, we're going to have, and we always put her to bed together when we can. And so I said, look, we're going to sit in your room for 10 minutes and we're going to talk. We can talk about anything you want. It can be silly. It can be serious. It can be about camp. It can be about our days, anything. Cause she always says to us, tell me everything about your day. So we sat and talked, and
remind people how old Eden is too, by the way.
She's 4 and a half.
Okay. Some people thinking Eden's 18 and they're like, this is a little strange.
Four and a half years old. So she enjoyed that talk. And then this morning she wasn't crying, but you could tell that she was anxious about it. So then we talked a little bit more about confidence and things that you have to do and how some kids in her bunk won't like drama or arts and crafts or even basketball and things that she really likes, but they just do it anyway. And you have to take other people's feelings into account. You can't just ruin it for the rest of your bunk or your counselor's day. And then I showed her that video that's been going around. I saw on ESPN's account. Did you see the video of the guy who was trying to do that, the box jump?
And I have not seen this.
So there's a guy, and he's in a training room, and he's trying to do a box jump, and he can't get it. And his coaches and trainers are imploring him, trying to push him on, and he gets it, and then he breaks down in tears because of his effort. And this guy, he didn't have any arms. And it's about 35 seconds, and I showed it to Eden this morning, and I said, look what you have, and look what this guy is trying to do. And he's failing and failing and failing, and he keeps trying. I don't know what's going on in swim, but I do know that it's a whole lot easier than what he's doing.
Wow.
And we watched it again, and she wanted to show Marissa, and so hopefully she nodded her head, and it seemed to impact her because she didn't say anything. She just kind of nodded her head. So hopefully that takes us somewhere.
This is parent of the year stuff.
Yeah, we're trying about.
And I'm impressed. So first of all, I'm glad that Eden is even, maybe if it's not back to 100% Eden, at least we're back to like a safe place, happy. Because when you and I did the podcast last week, it was I was worried. I could feel your stress. I could feel your stress across from the podcast. So I'm glad to hear that she's okay and working on it. And obviously, you guys are just crushing it as parents. And I guess this book, Pride and Joy, I'm going to have to pick up. I probably hit on the other end of the spectrum. Noah, I was going to tell you a story that I'm now going to save for the end of the podcast.
Okay.
That's actually a baseball story that fits in with us always talking about something that entertained us this week. But so my daughter, Bella, is 13 years old, and she had a friend come over the other day. Her friend was a very picky eater and kind of like, I don't want to say obnoxious about it because that's wrong. But at 13, like, you know, we can find some common ground. But she was understanding and cool about it. But I figured, why not? She's 13. I can give her a hard time, right? Like, not in a bad way, but still, I can give her a hard time. So my wife was making shrimp orzo for dinner. I didn't realize that Bella's friend, who shall remain nameless, is a vegetarian. So she wasn't going to eat the shrimp, which I didn't realize that the shrimp you couldn't eat if you're, I didn't know that, but that's okay. I understand. And I support that. I'm like, all right, that's cool. So then she also then couldn't, but she doesn't like, certain kinds of pasta. So she didn't want the orzo either. So I ended up making her a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for dinner. And she wanted that and ate about a quarter of it. And while she was eating that, I started asking her about how she, you know, became a vegetarian. I'm like, you know, what prompted this? I'm curious for a 13-year-old. She's like, you know, I just really don't like the mistreatment, you know, of animals and stuff. And so I don't want to hear about animals being killed. And that's how, you know, it becomes food. And I said, oh, I understand that. I said, when I, you know, before I eat a burger, I make sure that the cow is already dead. And she looks at me, Noah, and she looks at me and she says, well, but the truth is you can never really tell because they lie about that stuff on the box. And I thought that was the funniest thing. Like she was like, you know, when they write it on the box that these things are already dead, you don't know that to be true. And I'm thinking,
wait, what box says dead cow? Dead cow meat.
That's been my thing.
What?
So
wait, did Bella react?
she kind of just had this like confused look that she was kind of mad because she knew I was making fun of her friend, but her friend wasn't picking up on it. So it became this whole thing. And the last few days, just been dying, like thinking about all the scenarios in which you would need like, oh, sorry, there's no burgers at In-N-Out this week. We just, sorry, no natural cause deaths for the cows. So, oh, it was wild. And then the next morning, this same girl, there wasn't really any cereal that she wanted, or I was going to make her pancakes or eggs. She didn't want any of that. So she finally said, Bella was like, well, what about waffles? And she's like, okay, I'll have one of those. And they were frozen waffles. And she grabs the waffle and she starts to try like eating it. And I'm like, Oh no.
Like,
I go, no, you need to throw that in the toaster. That's way too cold. You might chip a tooth. She goes, oh no, this is fine. This is fine. I'm like,
she was totally, she was definitely embarrassed at that point.
Absolutely.
And so she just went with it.
Yeah. And for good reason too. So I don't know if there's a section on not making fun of teenage girls in Pride and Joy, but that's become part of my life. So.
Oh man.
Yeah. Natural
causes. How does
that
happen?
I don't.
How does that happen?
It's just so funny because she had this idea that she's a vegetarian and she's so into this.
Did you talk to Bella about
idea.
It afterwards? Actually, don't go down that route with Bella because I don't know if her this friend's parents listen or what. Don't go down
she's,
that route.
Yeah.
No, that's tough.
Bella and I had a few conversations. She wasn't happy that I had given her friend a hard time, but her older sister thought it was hysterical. So,
That's tough.
And I thought
that's
you'd
tough.
Think it's funny, and that matters the most to me. So,
oh, boy.
Should we get into this
that
show? Talk some hoops
in a moment. We're going to get into the show. We're going to talk hoops in a moment. But the big news off the court this week was Mitch Bernstein, the son of Bruce Bernstein, our producer,
yes,
and his girlfriend Becca, now fiance Becca, getting engaged. So I figured we'd take just a few moments to give some sort of not marriage advice, but wedding planning advice. And so I thought like some of the best wedding planning advice that I got was just say yes. And that's kind of cliche, but it's less of just say yes and know when to pick your battles. Like what's worth it? Like napkins, not worth it. Invitations, worth it. If your fiance picks out, say, three invitations and says, all right, which one do you like the best? Don't say, well, whatever one you like the best. Actually offer something. And also make sure that everybody is on the same page. In-laws, like everybody knows. However, financially, the ceremony, everything is getting paid for it. Just make sure all of that is on the table first. Leave nothing in doubt. And also make something about the wedding truly yours so that it doesn't feel like just another wedding. Since we've all been to so many weddings, make it something where when people are walking away saying that really felt like Becca and Mitch.
I love all that advice. And what's interesting, Noah, is that before I was married first time, which I always have to clarify for people, I'm happily married to Kate and super in love. So no one
has
to
go back and hear some of that story.
If
you want to go back and hear some of that story, go download the podcast called The Follow-Up and you can hear my conversation with that.
Yes. We had a great conversation about my life. I appreciate that. Noah, you having me on. Someone had told me before I was ever married, they said, you can't just know as a guy, you can't win because you're going to go to your fiance. Well, she'll go to you and she'll say, hey, to your point, which napkin do you want? The one with the flower or the one without the flower? And if you say, it doesn't really matter to me, you're going to hear, you don't care at all. You're not involved. This doesn't mean anything to you. Then if you give your opinion and say, oh, I like the one with the flower, you're going to hear, well, I like the one without the flower. We're going with that. So, but now that I think back on it, regardless, you should still give your opinion and then just be wrong, or you get along and you figure it out. Right. Like, so you're always winning. And I didn't even know we were going down this path. I knew we would congratulate Bruce's son. I'm super happy for Bruce and his son and his fiance. But I was going to offer best man advice, which is I've given many speeches, and and the biggest advice is that every single thing in your speech should be either sentimental or funny.
Yep.
No one cares about anything else. If
there's no wasted time in your speech.
No, be concise. And it doesn't matter the length of the speech. Someone will listen to a 20-minute speech if it's hysterical. I've been around some phenomenal speeches. But the moment you start saying, yeah, I remember we played on that Little League team in sixth grade, and then move on to the next thing.
Crickets.
Cricket every single time.
If it's something that only one person, if only it's the groom gets it, talk about it on the bachelor party. Nobody else wants to hear about it.
Yes, inside jokes, drop them. And my family is notorious, and I can't even give most of the content that was involved in our families. But we've had this history of best man speeches, which have turned into roasts. And so when I was first married, my brother Randy got up and gave this insane speech that was just over the top, and there were sexual innuendos and there were references, and yikes. and then from there, so then my little brother at that time was a lot younger. He gave a speech that was nice. Then Randy ends up getting married. Randy says, you know, so Randy's the middle brother, and then Eric's the youngest. So Randy then says, hey, at my wedding, he's like, look, my father-in-law knows some people who are connected. So Uncle Junior from The Sopranos was actually at the wedding. And he said, no mafia jokes and no mafia jokes and no ex-girlfriend jokes. So my little brother, who at the time is still a teenager at this point because of the age gap in our family, he ends up getting up. And what does he talk about? He tells some mob jokes, and he told a long unnecessary story about an ex-girlfriend. So that was super uncomfortable. So then so then we're dying. Then when after we're now I come up and now I get married again, to like unbelievable wedding, all that stuff. Both my brothers full on roast, totally inappropriate. Half the room is in tears laughing. Half the room is like mortified.
Yeah. I'm
dying of laughter because I think it's hysterical at this point. So now finally my little brother gets married a couple of years ago, and we get it. So Randy and I have been writing this speech for years. Like, we both had speeches that we were dying to write. And then I get a text that morning basically saying, from my dad's friend saying, listen, my daughters are going to be there. You really have to keep it clean. Make sure you maintain some composure and poise and keep it classy. And I'm like, you have no understanding of like what's happened here. Not to mention Eric's fiance. The best part of this was the last couple of years was freaking out, knowing that after all Eric had done at these weddings, like, and how inappropriate he was, like, he was going to get it when it was his turn. And so that's something to note too. So the funny thing is Randy ends up giving his speech and totally clean the entire time. And I start sweating because I'm thinking, oh no, he screwed me. The whole speech I've been writing for the last few years.
Right.
And then he ends his speech, puts the mic down, and then picks it back up and says like the most vulgar thing you could possibly imagine, comparing my brother's ego to the size of his not ego.
Yeah, sure.
And ends up like dropping the mic. It wasn't even really a joke. It was just sort of to say it for shock value.
That's kind of shocking,
And he told me later he did it like as hey, I was never going to leave you like that. And I've been so thankful ever since. It was totally wrong and inappropriate, but thankful. My speech, totally wrong and inappropriate. I think the only joke that I could probably say, even on this podcast, which
is anybody
going to
get it?
Saying, I said that my brother and his now wife were a total mismatch. I said, It'd be like if in Beauty and the Beast, Beauty married the candle. That was my joke. That was the one for the kids. I wanted to keep it clean for just at least one joke. But so that's the other thing is to understand there are people around. Just make sure your jokes are funny. Know your audience and know that you're going to get it back too. So I know that probably the person giving the best man speech, I think, is the younger brother, Adam Bernstein. So if he does give this speech, just be aware. I don't even know if Adam's married. I don't think he is, but it can come back to haunt you later. So just understand that they can get you back. You always want to give a stronger speech when that person can't return the favor.
All right. Speaking of knowing our audience, let's talk hoops.
Time to hit the spread.
So I don't know who is actually on the USA basketball team, and already the jokes on Twitter. And it's funny, the Press Box podcast from The Ringer with Brian Curtis, they always go with every week they have one or two overused Twitter joke. And I think the one this week should be random person or media member or whoever saying, I'm officially removing myself from consideration for USA basketball. I'm like, all right, we get it. All right. Like, look on Twitter first before if a joke is that obvious, come on.
Yes.
All right. And so I don't know who's participating, but I also don't blame any of these guys for dropping out, except for if like Bradley Beal. Or not Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard, I think it is, said, my wife's having a baby, I'm out. Like, what are you, like, you just found out? he's like, my wife's due in August, I'm out. And I love Damian Lillard, but, so why were you ever in?
That's the real point. Why were you ever in? And I have a list, Noah, as of today, so while we're recording this on Tuesday, that it looks like, just so everyone's aware, Donovan Mitchell's...
Did yours include Tobias Harris being out? I didn't even know he was in, but he's out.
Tobias Harris is not on this list.
Okay, well, he's the last one I saw that is out.
Okay.
I didn't even know he was ever in.
Yeah. Because in recent weeks, so this, it's coming from a Yahoo article that's apparently got to keep updating itself, but... Anthony Davis, James Harden, Bradley Beal, CJ McCollum, Tobias Harris, DeRozan, Eric Gordon, and Zion all withdrawn from the team. It's Bradley Beal, by the way, birth of his child.
It's Beal. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Lillard and DeRozan, the latest, according to this article. And so it says Donovan Mitchell's going to play on the team. Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, Julius Randle, Thaddeus Young. They've been added to the roster.
Young for Team USA. Thaddeus Young.
Because I want to go through some of these names. Like that's where I think this conversation should go. So also listed on the roster, Harrison Barnes, Andre Drummond, Kyle Kuzma, Brooke Lopez, Kevin Love, Kyle Lowry, Paul Millsap, Jason Tatum, PJ Tucker, Miles Turner. And then Joe Vardon in The Athletic says that D'Angelo Russell, Aaron Gordon, Mike Conley, and Josh Richardson are in the mix for invitations to training.
They might lose.
These
guys have played anything. Not anything in the league.
And then the players, and then apparently players like Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox, Joe Harris, Mitchell Robinson, and Jarrett Allen, who are on that select team, could be called up to the senior team. So multiple things, though, I think this brings up, Noah, that are at least of interest to me. First of all, at what point, and I'm dead serious when I ask this, because so much about what drives players, we've talked about the idea of going for legacy in terms of free agency signing. But when it comes to something like this, which is unique, how much of this starts to become about ego, and how much of it starts to, the question I guess I have for you is, at what point do guys say, I'm not going to play because playing is almost going to make me look bad? And I don't mean like performing. I don't mean anything else. I just mean like being on this team. Like, in a way, so many guys have dropped off at this point that now if you were playing, it's like, what does that say about you? It's like the guy that returns to college for his junior or senior year.
Nah, I think it makes you look better. I think when guys return to college, that's because for the most part is because they got the intel that they weren't going to be drafted high enough, so they decided to go back. I think in this case, you know, like Donovan Mitchell, I think it makes him look even better that, okay, I can be the best player on this team. I can be the leader on this team. And they still think, look, we're not going to lose, but they might. And you've got to win the FIBA World Cup in order to qualify for the Olympics, or else you got to go through Olympic qualifying again. So I think there needs to be some sort of conversation between USA Basketball and the owners and players and maybe even the Players Association so that USA Basketball isn't embarrassed by this. Because I think it's embarrassing, but I don't think the players themselves look bad for playing. But if you're one of those late ads, or really everybody on this at this point is a late ad, and you lose, then it's ugly. That's the ugliness. When you lose wearing the United States uniform, that's awful.
Oh, look, when we did the Larry Brown interview, to reference that again, you know, and I'd asked some people, you know, what questions do you have? So many were about Larry Brown's, you know, in losing in the Olympics and why didn't he play the younger guys and Carmelo and LeBron more and Dwayne Wade at that time and all that stuff. But just to be clear, I wasn't necessarily saying that I think it makes them look bad. I wasn't so much saying it from like what the fans would think or the media would project. I was more saying, are guys going to drop out because that's their perception? Like, would all of a sudden, you know, does a Kemba Walker say, well, wait a minute, if all these other stars aren't playing, I'm not going to play. And I guess maybe the motivating factor for something like that would more at this point be, wait, I don't want to play if we're going to lose, you know, or that fear of losing. But I don't think any of these guys are worried about that. How much are you concerned that we're starting to get back to the place that started up the deterioration, which caused us to need the dream team in the first place?
I don't think the Olympic team is going to have an issue, but I think that some of the qualifying teams might. And I think location has a lot to do with it. Being close to the season, I don't think it's in a major Chinese city. A lot in the outskirts of the major cities. So I think location has a lot to do with it, and also what's at stake. So I think you'll have it for the Olympics. I think you won't have any problem. So I don't think there needs to be the full tear down rebuild, but it is up to this next generation to figure out who are going to be the LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade guys who do carry the torch. And speaking of Carmelo, why don't you just put him on this team?
Why not?
Right?
At that point.
Like, let him go out that way.
Yeah, that could be a great send-off. He's had a great, great international career.
Right. Like, the Olympic Melo is the best Melo.
Yes.
So let him go out that way.
I like this. I like this idea. I'm all for it. So I'm willing to move forward with this. Noah, let me ask you this question. Who would you like to see on that team? I don't mean the entire roster. I'm saying a couple of guys that out of that list that you would like to end up seeing playing for Team USA.
Honestly, I don't even remember who you said was on that list, but I would like to see a bunch of guys, young guys, because I also think you could move this to say like 26 and under. And I think I'd like to see a bunch of young guys from the same team. So whether it's a few of the younger guys on the Nets or a few of the younger guys on the Hawks or the Celtics playing together and seeing how that can, being together in that situation and being under the tutelage of USA Basketball, how that can help translate into success during the regular season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum.
If you put John Collins, Herder and Trae Young on there together, great.
Absolutely.
If you put Caris LeVert and Jared Allen together, great. So yeah, I think there's an opportunity to do something there. I don't really want to see like Jeremy Lamb and Malcolm Brogdon and T.J. Warren play together. That doesn't really interest me.
That doesn't do it for you?
No. Let's talk about undervalued teams. So I was looking at championship odds, Adam, and this year there are 8 teams with odds at 15 to 1 or better. Okay. So in order, championship odds: Clippers, Bucks, Lakers, Sixers, Rockets, Warriors, Nuggets, Jazz. And the Nuggets and Jazz are at 15 to 1. If you went back and looked at 15 to 1 last year, who had odds like that preseason, right, only three. The Warriors, who were, you know, you had to bet 168 to win 100, so they were prohibitive favorites. And then the Celtics, and then the Rockets were at 10 to 1, and then the Lakers last year preseason were 18 to 1. So you see how chaotic and how spread out the title odds are, and what kind of regular season that we might be having this year. Who do you look at as undervalued teams? And most likely it's teams that really didn't do a ton this offseason.
Well, I mean, that's the big thing. And even the reason that I wanted to discuss this with you was because my neighbor, David, who, if someone recalls on a previous podcast, he was the one that showed me the, my buddy David showed me the poker invitation that was like this huge PowerPoint presentation thing, that was bananas. He ended up actually showing that. He played the clip for the guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and apparently he said it wasn't 50 pages, it was 24. But regardless, David had brought it up to me and said, you know, he listens to a ton of basketball podcasts and said that, you know, it always seems like they're talking about the same five or six teams. And I think that's true. And the interesting part, though, is that typically the reason is because those are the teams that people feel are going to have a chance to win it. And this year, it just feels so different in that regard, in the sense that it really is much more wide open as of right now. That's how it feels.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
Speaking of like talking about the same teams over and over again.
Yeah, go
on the radio, on Sirius, we're told play the hits.
Yeah.
And I say, well, like, no, this is a good story. This play the hits. Lakers, Sixers, Warriors, Rockets, play the hits. I'm like, all right, but as a listener, I'd be pretty bored by that. But hey, if that's what you say.
No, it's funny that you bring that up, because when I was at ESPN and doing some producing, there was the year where all the drama was taking place with the Lakers. They were at the bottom of the standings with Nash and Dwight, you know, you recall. Yeah. And it was every night. That was all everybody wanted to talk about. And so we got in the production meeting. It was for a SportsCenter NBA segment, and we sat around and said, okay, what do you want to talk about on the basketball side? And I said, all right, here's my plan. And I laid out, this is what we should talk about for this basketball segment. And I said, the Spurs have won whatever it was at the time. I want to say like 12 in a row, but they were the hottest team in the NBA. And a couple of the people in the room interrupted me and said, we can't talk Spurs. And the producer of that show said, if we talk Spurs, I'm going to get in trouble. I might even get fired.
What?
And I was blown away. And I think what's really interesting, and this obviously isn't even where we were sort of thinking we were going with this discussion, but I just want to say as an aside, what's so fascinating about that is that I hear all the time, and our producer, Bruce Bernstein, is also an ESPN alum. Obviously, you've worked at a few national huge places of importance. That like, I think a lot of times people think in the media that it's some voice from up above that's telling people what to do and what to talk about and what to cover. And in many cases, that's true. That mm-hmm. is true. But there are also a lot of cases where it's just the idea that maybe you told someone what to say a previous month or year or week, and now that producer is gun shy. That producer would have been fine. In fact, probably would have been praised for talking about the Spurs on that day, in addition to what was happening with the Lakers. But it's that fear of, I don't want to upset the bosses. And I know if I quote unquote play the hits, as you describe, like it'll be okay. And I think that's what drives a lot of this coverage. And this year in the NBA, that's such a weird thing, because there are so many teams that ultimately, get back to your question, that have a chance to win this thing.
Right. So like the Blazers at 30 to 1. I mean, the Nuggets, you couldn't even say are undervalued at 15 to 1, but that's a team that generally stayed pat, and the Nuggets last year were killer. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the Nuggets last year, I mean, that's a team that brings everybody back and won 54 games last year.
Two seed.
And you'd and it's another year of growth from Jamal Murray and Jokic and others. I think the Bucks end up taking a step back, and of course the Raptors take a step back also, but there aren't that many teams that made the playoffs last year that didn't do anything except the Blazers and the Nuggets.
Blazers and the Nuggets. And the Blazers got Hassan Whiteside.
He's apparently tight with Damian Lillard, but I guess that helps, but I don't know what Whiteside is at this point.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. I was almost emphasizing your point that's the highlight of that.
I guess the Spurs too, and they're getting back DeJounte Murray.
I mean,
and they won 48 games. We're not allowed to talk about the Spurs.
Well, and exactly. And they also get back Lonnie Walker from injury, who didn't get a chance to show what he's capable of. And I think that's the wild part about what we're looking at as we approach this NBA season is what's going to make this year so fun to watch is how does the chemistry work for these teams, which actually probably plays into the conversation about Team USA that apparently there's a focus now from a lot of these stars that they want to just get acclimated with their NBA teams because there's so much change and all that's taking place. But I think there's something to be said for cohesion and chemistry in the NBA. And just because we think that something's going to work or that you replace someone with someone better, look at Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook in that instance, that all of a sudden it automatically turns into wins. And in many cases, and guys can figure it out quickly, and they work out together over the summers and they start to connect through texting and all that kind of stuff. But it is still a growing process. And I do think that when you look at what the Nuggets have in particular, that this was this young team that's growing, also with Porter returning from his, you know, pre-draft injury at Missouri, like that, I think that they're a fascinating team to me, and they're a major team to watch. Obviously, the Jazz are a team to watch, but to me, I think the Spurs are the team that the Spurs and the Pacers are the two teams that I am really interested in. I think DeMar DeRozan is incredibly motivated. I think that, it's another chance for him and Aldridge to play together, but Derek White's emergence, and then we talked about it, the two guys, Murray and Lonnie Walker, returning from injury. I don't know that they're winning a championship, but I think that this team could really be much more dangerous than anybody thinks. And then I think on the Pacers side,
and Tim Duncan as an assistant coach.
And Tim Duncan, who Pop had one of the all-time great quotes, right? When he said that
I spent 19 years serving him, so now it's,
yes, you know, he's, it's he could be my loyal assistant.
Yeah,
returned the favor. And then on the Eastern Conference side, I think it's the Pacers. I mean, again, we get a guy returning from injury, which I think sometimes is way more significant than even bringing in a free agent. You get Oladipo back after what they had shown, and their entire backcourt basically flipped, and now they've got, you know, Brogdon and Jeremy Lamb. And while those guys might not be the most fun guys to see on Team USA, like, they will be fun and exciting for Pacers fans who should be excited about what that team's done over the last few seasons.
Yeah, I think the Pacers are going to miss Bogdanovich a lot.
That is true.
Since he was the one in the playoffs who really the only one who's able to get his own. But I still need to see if, you know, with Sabonis and Miles Turner, two really good talents, is whether they can be on the floor together, and then how they exist in separate units. And then, of course, what Oladipo looks like when he comes back. But what they did last year was terrific. And that's why Nate McMillan got so much consideration for Coach of the Year.
I think we're about to go off the rails.
So I always wrap it up by going off the rails. And a quick one for you, I think I may have talked about my neighbor before, Dorothy. She's 89 years old, and so I'll go to the supermarket for her. She doesn't really need much, but you know, I'll walk down to the market for her, or let her know when I'm going, and or I'll just pick up things that I know that she usually has, and you know, and drop them off. And so she likes these from Fairway Market here in New York. She likes the small organic yams. She doesn't have a huge appetite. So, you know, four small organic yams will last her a while. And so she has said that she really likes the ones that I pick out. So Marissa was going like a few weeks ago, and I said, Marissa, while you're at Fairway, can you get Dorothy the yam? Just pick out the smallest ones, the organic ones that you can find. So then Dorothy tells me the other day when I dropped off some stuff, she said, you know, I do appreciate Marissa going, but I got to tell you, like, you're the ones that you picked out were just so much better. Just so much better. Like, she picked out ones that had bumps on it. And she says, I know she probably doesn't do a whole lot around the house. And I was like,
that's a great line.
I was like, no, Dorothy, what do you mean? She does. She's working on, you know, works. And so I said, Dorothy, you know, years ago, maybe. And she was like a fashion executive as a woman, like 60 years ago or 70 years ago. She was a forerunner in this. But I said, no, Dorothy, trust me. Marissa does. She does plenty. But I will pick out the yams for you.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Oh,
89 years old, and she just could not give a flying F about whatever she says at this point.
I may start using that line to people. You know, I know that you probably don't do a lot around the house.
No, right.
You know, but that is. It is Marissa, get on your game.
Yeah, right. And as far as what's entertaining me, I put on the new episode, the new season of Comedians in Cars last night to watch Eddie Murphy, and it was okay. It was all right.
Underwhelmed.
And it was 40 minutes, and usually they're like 20 or 25 minutes.
Yes.
And you'd think, oh, Eddie Murphy, you'd want more. It was, I mean, I'm still going to watch the rest of them, but it was just okay.
That's interesting. I was actually going to talk about a Netflix show as well, which I'll get to for what I'm watching. And what's entertaining, it all just comes together, this off the rails and then what's entertaining us for the week. I saw a video clip though that on Twitter the Phillies I think had put out commemorating Roy Halladay's no-hitter in the playoffs. And I am not a baseball fan anymore. I don't follow baseball at all. I have zero interest. I haven't watched an inning in a couple of years. I really haven't. And that's just, I realize where my interests lie and what I have time for and what I want to spend my time on. So even though I considered myself at one point a sports fan, that sports fandom has really narrowed, and I'm way more just basketball at all levels and all that, and some football, but baseball has fallen off. But I happened to come across something someone had retweeted. It was a 7-minute feature on Roy Halladay, and I was really riveted by it. And it was interesting. And they had all these different characters from the game on this feature on Twitter. And you know, of course, the new age thing now on social media is, oh, people won't watch anything that's very long, and you have to keep things short and all that. Well, this thing was 7 minutes and had my attention throughout, which is long for Twitter, is what I'm saying. So anyhow, I watch it. One of the characters in the piece is Joey Votto. And I remember Joey Votto being a good baseball player back a few years ago when I used to watch. And I was like, oh, I wonder if I know he's played for years. I wonder if that guy's still in the league, because he came off as extremely charismatic in this piece. And I was really just impressed with Joey Votto. I'm like, wow, he seems like a great guy. Like, just a great guy. So I was like, is he still playing? So I look up on Baseball Reference, and you know, he's still playing. He's in his 13th season, and has, as I start to go down the list, the guy's won an MVP. He's got a 308 career average. Like, this guy looks like he's like Hall of Fame worthy, possibly. You know, an MVP, 308 career average. I start looking, 945 OPS. Like, wow, Joey Votto. All right, man, I hope this guy makes it. Like, now I'm vested. I have an interest in Joey Votto after being impressed with him, how he was talking about what Roy Halladay did to them in the in this playoff game, which usually it's bitterness coming from an opponent. And instead, he took the opposite approach in this piece. So I text a buddy of mine and I said, hey, is Joey Votto a Hall of Famer? This guy's a big baseball fan. He gets back to me, well, I don't know. I think he needs a couple more good seasons, and then I think he'd be in. Right now, I don't know that he'd get in. I go, really? So now I'm looking at the baseball reference page, and all of a sudden, I'm invested, like I said. So I send him back some stats. Like, look, this guy is like third highest right now for a career batting average of all the active players. And, you know, he's top 25 in certain statistics all time. So we're going back and forth, acting like as though I would know. I haven't watched this guy in years, so God, I have
you'll
no...
You'll do anything to waste time. Oh, my goodness.
All true.
Oh,
I don't,
my goodness.
To quote your neighbor, I don't really do much around the house, you know? So, but here was the crazy part about this story. It ends up going on, like, throughout the day, and not in a major way, but, like... Every time I'd get a text back from him, he'd go, yeah, but, and he'd send me some stats or something, so I'd look something else up. And the funny part is, here I'm acting like I've seen anything, and he knows that I haven't watched a pitch in, like I said, a couple of years now. And so we have this back and forth, and it's going on throughout the day. That night, I go on Netflix to catch up on some episodes, just like you were doing with Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I did with... the Letterman show, my next guest needs no introduction because there's a season two of that. And there's an episode of Zach Galifianakis that I wanted to watch and realized, oh, that's a bonus episode for season two. And saw that there was a bonus episode for season one that I had never seen. And it's Jerry Seinfeld kind of interviewing Letterman. And I'm like, this could be fascinating to hear the both of them and their takes on the industry and the process, which I'm very interested in. Point I'm getting to with this whole story, they start talking, and about midway through this interview, Letterman, like almost out of nowhere, goes, do you know the baseball player Joey Votto?
Stop it.
And Seinfeld is like, yeah, of course, great, terrific player, great player.
Right, Letterman
says,
guy,
yeah. And Letterman goes, yeah. He goes, I got to tell you, I'm at a baseball game. He's like, I was blown away. It's like the eighth inning, all this pressure situation. You could hear a pin drop. And Joey Votto's in the on-deck circle. And all of a sudden, he turns to and sees me sitting there in the stands and's like, hey, David, thanks so much for coming to the game. We really appreciate it. And he couldn't believe that this guy, mid-game in this tense pressure situation, he said, what a guy. Like, he recognized that. That's and Seinfeld cool. says, he did the same thing to me.
Oh, wow.
And it becomes a part of their show. But the mind-blowing part that I was dying to tell you this week, and I saved it for the podcast, was this idea that I have not mentioned a baseball player's name.
So weird.
I'm telling you, in years,
so weird.
Joey
so
Votto,
weird.
Of all people, comes up, and I'm going back and forth all day, and boom, he ends up being a significant part of this Netflix special that was on.
It's so weird.
It had to be a few months ago. And I happened to catch it that day, the same day that I'm going back and forth with.
I know. It makes you think like something's bugged in your house or some higher power is listening. It's so weird how that stuff happens.
So strange. Weird. So strange. But had to tell you, that's off the rails for me.
All right, pal. Enjoyed it. We'll do it again next week. What do you think?
I think we should thank people. I think we, you know, you're forgetting the whole Pure Hoops media team. We always do forget, though, to thank our editor, Ben Wolfen, who does a terrific job, and Bruce Bernstein, super producer. Scott Turkin's too busy this week to help out. And please, let's again congratulate Bruce's son, Mitch. It's awesome that he's getting married, and we're going to have to talk about that when that happens. Are we getting invites, Noah?
I mean, I'll take an invite to cocktail hour. I don't need to like stick around the whole time.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to go. I just wanted to see if Bruce.
I mean, if it's in New York City, like I could just go for dinner, right?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah,
I could go for dinner, and then I could give live commentary of the speeches, like let them know, like all right, I clap somebody off.
Usually
the maid of honor, you clap off.
I like that.
Yeah, maybe we'll go that route. And I don't, and I also, I don't know how big, I mean, we had a, I had a huge wedding. And we tried to make it feel small by, you know, spending, trying to spend time with everybody, but it was a really big wedding. So I don't know what the list is for Mitch and Becca. I don't know if we'll make the cut, but I won't be offended.
Yeah. I just want them to know above all else that this podcast was the gift. So don't expect another gift. This podcast is the gift that Noah and I are giving you.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even a question. Anyway, so we thank everybody at Pure Hoops Media. Make sure you check out the Mike Wise Show. Again, remarkably, he has the best of. That came out this week. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks, Monica McNutt, Eric Newman, and BJ Armstrong, the NBA champion, NBA agent. That's the Pure Hoops Show. Adam, thank you. Enjoy the rest of the week.
No, you're the best. Appreciate you.
The Catch and Shoot podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.